two receivers flank out to the left, including Shinbein, who's been quiet today. He'll motion in and a wing to the left. Here's Donnelly catching it with two hands out of the shotgun. Throws quickly to Stusik, makes the catch, little shimmy and shake. Don't have time for that, Bennett. He gets a first down inside the 25 to the 24.
Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
And thanks for taking in another installment of Growing the Game with Ballsy. I'd like to thank my sponsors that helped me pull off this podcast on a regular basis. That would be Face First Medical Aesthetics above Gabbo's on Dudney Avenue. Ask about birthday Botox. And for the dudes, Brotox. Don't forget about your face, guys. I know you look after your body, but look after your face in that naturally looking way. By SAS Selects Football, building the gridiron stars of tomorrow today. Thanks to Zelko Stefanovic and his wife Deb for their great work there with the Selects program. By Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan and David Dubé and the Concord Group of Companies. Thanks to David for his support over a long stretch here as it relates to growing the game with Ballsy. Also, Mark Greshner Photography. Check out his awesome work at markgreshner.com. Also, Paul Waldo at Royal LePage in Regina. Get in the real estate game with the three-time Grey Cup champion by calling 306-502-5355. Want to thank my friend Paul Riviere and his great family over there at Riviere Ag Seeds in Radville. They are Southern Saskatchewan's premium certified seed grower, delivering homegrown certified durum, yellow peas, and chickpeas. And we also want to thank my friend Corey Zadarozniak over there, Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn, for grain hauling, grain marketing, and crop insurance. Check out Corey's fine work at Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn. Well, one thing we love here, I've always said this, you grow this sport in two ways, in my opinion, with new Canadians, and you grow it, well, three ways. New Canadians, promoting our own, which I'm trying to do in this podcast, and a YouTube Top 50 Canada West show that's coming up here in the new year. Stay tuned for that. It's very exciting. Lots of work behind the scenes, but it's worth it to promote our athletes. And also promoting the female game. Well, one woman who was an icebreaker, and really she's come back into the forefront, is Joanne Pollock. Now, we're talking about Joanne Pollock now because Kim Ng was just hired as the Miami Marlins GM, the first female to crack that ceiling in Major League Baseball. But 32 years ago, Joanne Pollock took over the Ottawa Rough Riders as a 29-year-old as their general manager during some very tumultuous times. She joins us now on Growing the Game with Ballsy. How are you today, Joanne?
I'm great, thank you. And if you remember that name, it means you probably have gray hair.
well, I do, and I don't have gray hair yet. I don't have a lot of hair, but what I do have isn't gray yet, so no. I remember it fondly. I was 16 years old when you became the general manager, not to make you feel old, but we're talking about something else, which is cool. Kim Ng is the Marlins GM. She's the first GM in baseball. Are you mad, Joanne Pollock? We're still talking about this over 30 years after the fact when you joined the CFL.
I don't know. I think mad wouldn't be the right word. I think shocked, surprised probably, because I hadn't really, until I saw last week, I saw her appointment and the fact that she was the first in quite some time, I didn't even really realize that there hadn't been anyone since then. I just assumed, you know, that somewhere throughout the sports hemisphere that there had been someone, and it was only then that I realized that it's been 30 years since the last time there was a female general manager.
Are you proud you were the first?
Yeah, I am now. I think my age kind of makes me look back at that sort of thing. I think I'm just proud that I was a part of the Canadian Football League. And, you know, it is such an incredible league full of incredible people. And I got to be a part of it for a brief period in time, which I think is one of the greatest privileges of my life.
So you were a 29-year-old when you were hired as the general manager. How did it come to be that you were appointed the GM of the Ottawa Rough Riders?
Well, if you were 16, so you remember what was going on at the time.
Yeah.
That the league was in terrible position. We had lost our television contract from CTV. Montreal had already folded. And the common viewpoint was if one more team went down, chances are good that the entire league is going down. So the owners at the time, and of course, up until that point, all of the people who ran these teams were all football people. so had been grown up through the football ranks. That's not the way things work now, but back then that was the way things were. And our owners were so concerned that they wanted to do something very, very different. So I think it's as much, of course the first woman thing was big, but it was as much that they brought in a non-football person to run the place, and that was unheard of.
Yeah, that is cool. We'll get into that in a second. Now, a coaching candidate said they'd never work for a woman when they were kind of looking into the job in Ottawa. That's kind of a glimpse of the climate you dealt with when you came into professional football. Can you expand on that for our audience a bit?
Yeah, because more than that, I mean, it also gives you a glimpse into what society was like at the time. So it was more than just professional football. It was society. The news had leaked out that I was going to be the next general manager. So we hadn't had the actual announcement yet, and they were in the process. You know, we were finding a head coach. And when the news leaked out about me, one candidate who was a very successful coach, I got to tell you this right now, basically said, I heard it on Sunday morning. I woke up and I heard it on CBC, of all places, that said there's no way I would work for a woman. And, of course, nobody even blinked an eye. Everybody's going, well, I don't blame them. But that's the way society was. That wasn't just football. You could never say something like that on radio right now. You could never say that.
No.
But 30 years ago, that was the way people talked.
Yeah, for sure. Joanne Pollock joining us here, the first female general manager in North American professional sports. She did it with the Ottawa Rough Riders back in the late 80s, 1988 through 1991, I believe. Now, how did you teach yourself the game of football? I read an interesting story. You used to go and sit on the bench and watch different positions every day.
Every afternoon, because every night I had to go out and do different kinds of promotions. You know, it was because that's a part of being the Canadian Football League. You're in the community, you do community things. So our practices would start around 4:45, and I would go out every single night, and it would allow me to decompress, and I would just watch the offensive line. And then I would watch them practice, and then the next game, I would watch them play. And I would watch the defensive secondary. And I mostly, not that I was trying to teach myself, mostly because I was just blown away by the skill required, by the strategy required, by what it took to play football at that level. And I'm to this day the biggest football geek you will ever meet. I absolutely adore everything about football, and I think I'm still learning, and I will until, you know, I watch my last game. But it is the most extraordinary game. It's a whole bunch of games within a game.
Yeah, no.
Every snap is a game within a game, and it's just so integrate. I can never say that word. You know what I mean? And it's so all connected, and everybody has to do their job, and it's just a thing of beauty. And I would watch it in awe. I would watch it in absolute awe, and then I have never lost it since. I got to tell you, I watched all the games yesterday, both games. And, I watch NFL, I watch college, I watch, of course, Canadian Football League. I can't get enough football.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. A woman after my own heart for sure. Now, Joanne, tell me about that coach's dinner in Nashville, because that was an interesting story I heard where, first of all, you weren't allowed in the dinner initially.
Well, what happens is the Canadian Football League every year would put on this dinner for the, it was at the coaches' convention, which happens every single year.
Right.
And it happens in January, and it's when all of the coaches from all of the leagues, NFL, you know, who are out of the playoffs, college, CFL, you know, even Canadian college, all the coaches go there because it's where coaches are hired and fired.
Mm-hmm.
So all the coaches who have jobs are wearing golf shirts, and all the coaches looking for jobs are wearing shirts and ties. It's a whole area. So anyway, so the Canadian Football League puts on this dinner. It's a big dinner. And so I get to the door, and they stopped me at the door, and they said, no, I'm sorry, you're not allowed in, even though CFL. So Bill Baker, Regina Bill Baker, mm-hmm. who was a commissioner at the time, basically had to go and tell them, no, she's with us. And then when he introduced me, the place just went silent. And then all the guys who had the shirts and ties who were looking for jobs were lined up to give me the resume.
That's pretty funny. Hey, when you took this football team over, it was $1.2 million in debt, bad relationships in town with the business community. Did you say to yourself, what the hell did I get myself into?
I was so overwhelmed by it all that I really, you never have any idea until you're in the middle of it. And you just walk in, and with every time you turn something over, there's another problem. And every time you open the door, there's another problem. And you could understand how it was that we as a team had gotten into the shape that we were in. It was rotten, you know, to the core. And I'm not blaming anybody because it built up over a long period of time. But like the way I look at it is like somebody pushed me into the deep end with an anchor around my neck. And it's not even swim. It's just how can you get a grasp of air every now and then so that you could just keep going. But the enormity of what was at stake was so big that you couldn't even allow yourself to stop for a second to think about, you know, geez, I wish I hadn't done this. I never thought that.
Didn't the Argos ownership tell you need a new stadium and you said we can't even get a scoreboard?
Oh, absolutely. Well, see, what happened is at the same time in 1989, the Sky Dome opened in Toronto. And as all things Toronto, everything that happens in Toronto is the center of the universe. So
right. All
anybody talked about was this, you know, new stadium. So Harry Arnest, who was the owner of the Argos at the time, is like, Joanne, you know, you guys, a way to attract fans is to get a new stadium. And we had this old scoreboard. You could probably find it on Google or something. And we couldn't even get that fixed. And to me, every game day, I'd say, is the scoreboard working? And because there's nothing worse than watching a football game without a scoreboard.
Hey, Joanne.
And that's because of the clock,
yeah.
Not because of the score.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, Joanne, so tell me about the infamous promotion, Lambsdown Park.
Oh, it's probably what sort of set us apart right off the top. And again, it was the exact same situation. We were playing the Argos. We were playing them, I think, July 17th, 1989. It was our first home, you know, first regular season home game. Sky Dome had just opened, so we were trying to figure out a way to get some kind of attention. And so what we did is we put out a news release that said, you know, or a letter to the Argos that said, we want free dome from the Sky Dome and all the reasons why we didn't need a Sky Dome, including things like, you know, Parliament Hill keeps the air warm year-round, all sorts of fun things.
Yeah.
And then we told all the fans, bring an umbrella to the game, and that was our retractable roof, and it just exploded. It took off, and it was on the front. It was national news because nobody could believe that we were poking our fun at the Argos the way we were. And so the day of the game, watching the fans coming in from all across, you know, Ottawa, everybody having an umbrella, and we put out a little note that just said, okay, as soon as we score, you know, hopefully not a missed field goal, but as soon as we score, everybody put up your umbrella and we'll put the roof up. And it was just, and of course the music is going, we scored, it was probably a field goal. We scored and then all you could see is all of the umbrellas just like going up and down. It was an absolute thing of beauty.
But didn't you run out of tickets? Didn't you run out of tickets?
Well, what happened is, we didn't expect to have that many people walk up at that time. And so, now, well, not as much now because nobody has printed tickets, but
yeah. You
go into Ticketmaster, you give them the money, they push the ticket out on the, you know, out of the computer.
Yeah.
Well, we had probably between 10 and 15,000 people show up between 6 and 7:30, and you just can't move that many people through. So, you know, it was just that I remember getting a call from the ticket office around 15 minutes into the game, and I ran to the side of the stadium, looked down, and Bank Street was completely covered with people trying to get into the game. And we just said, let them in. Just open the gates, let them all in. And people came in, and one person was stuffing money in my pocket. But everybody came in because we just never expected that kind of success. And that really came from the Lansdowne Park, I think, promotion, which captured people's attention. And typical CFL, it was a sunny summer night. So
yeah.
You can sell a lot of tickets on a sunny summer night or on a clear, beautiful, warm summer night.
That's awesome. Okay, Joanne Pollock, two more quick questions for you. How do you feel about your CFL right now and what they're going through? That's, you know, the charm of this league has always been one foot on steady ground, one on the edge of the cliff. You know what I mean? This time it feels like we're hovering right over the edge. How do you feel about the future of this league?
Well, I think, I think the league has got it right because this is much bigger. What's going on right now is so much bigger than football and so much bigger than the Canadian Football League. And, you know, this is something that everybody is struggling with. And I think I give them a lot of credit for pulling the plug on the season like they did because, you know, it was going to be extremely difficult. And I think if we can get this disease, this virus, you know, to the point where if we could come back in June with a season, then I think everything will be fine, you know, but it's a difficult, it's not like the NFL. The NFL can run games all day long and it doesn't matter if there's anybody in the stadium because everything comes from television revenue. Well, that's not the way Canadian Football League is. We need bums in seats and we need their ticket money. So we could never operate a season like this. So I've got to give them credit for, you know, recognizing the way it was, not trying to cobble something together, you know, to get through this season, you know, and then come back as strong as they can next year. And they will, because they are resilient and they always come through.
Okay, lastly, and that kind of, to me, that describes you, but how do you want to be remembered? You're now the VP of Communications for Canada Post, but how does Joanne how does Joanne Pollock want to be remembered for her time in the CFL?
I think it's just, honestly, it was as somebody who was part of a 100-year tradition. I was there for a snapshot in time, and so I was part of what is football in Ottawa. I was a little bit a part of it. And everybody who plays, like, I'm still pretty close with a lot of the players and coaches who played, you know, on our teams. And we've all gone on to different things, but we all have that in common, is that for one brief moment in time, we were all together and we were all part of Ottawa Rough Riders and part of the Canadian Football League. And you can never take that away from us.
Awesome, Joanne. Thanks for your time. Enjoy your weekend, okay?
And one more thing is that out of all of the cities in all of Canada outside of Ottawa, I was so welcomed with open arms in Regina every single time I came. I just can't thank the people of Regina and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders enough.
Well, thank you very much for those kind words. And hey, that was also a charm of the league. We had what? We had 9 teams, 8 teams, and 2 of them had the same name, which was hilarious.
Yeah, we had a bit of fun with that, both sides.
Thanks, Joanne.
Okay.
Well, recently I had a chance to catch up with Riders quarterback Cody Fajardo, and of course, in the offseason here, the elongated offseason, unfortunately, he's taken up coaching at the high school level in Reno. I asked him about that, and the best piece of advice he's ever received from a youth football coach.
Yeah, you know, youth, the number one thing is have fun. And a lot of times, I think about that more now than ever, because when monetary value gets involved, a lot of times you overlook the fun part and you start looking at more as a job, which you should, because you're kind of at risk of getting cut in certain situations. So that's one thing I try and carry. I try and remember, like, playing Pop Warner or playing high school, when you would get out of the car and sprint to the field because you couldn't wait to play football with your buddies. And so that's just one of those things that I try and carry with me. Was one of my coaches was like, wins and losses will come, but I want you guys to have fun. And the whole reason we're playing this is because it's a sport. It's here to have fun. In college, the best advice I ever got was from my offensive coordinator, who's now the head coach at Washington State. He said, play the next play mentality. And I had a really hard time of, if I let one mistake, it would just eat at me. If I made a mistake early in my career, my college career, if I threw a pick, if I fumbled, if I made a bad read, it would snowball effect, and it would take 2 or 3 series for me to get back on track. And so he just pulled me aside and just kind of gave me that play that next play mentality. And ever since then, it's helped me kind of recoup from a negative play.
Hey, what makes you, Cody Fajardo, a good coach?
That's a great question. I think for me, probably being relatable as I'm still playing. A lot of times you see high school coaches or college coaches who have been, 15 years removed from football, and obviously it changes on a year-to-year basis. So one thing I see with a lot of my players now in high school is just being able to be relatable with them and be like, hey, that same exact drill you do, I do. Or the way we watch film, I do it that way as well. And I'm currently doing it in a professional state. So it kind of carries a little bit more weight, which is nice.
Right.
But another thing that I really like to do is I wear my cleats out to practice, and I go through all the drills with my players, with my quarterbacks, because one, I get the reps and I get to practice and get better. And two, I get to kind of show them how I want it done, as opposed to, you get some of those coaches who are like, yeah, do this, this, and this. And these players are thinking like, you've never done this in your life, nor can you do it right now, right? So It's a little bit more respect when you see your coach go out there and do it. And so that's just something I do.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Ballsy can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Rough Riders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.